Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Time for parenting. As the nice lady said there, Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Here's your first question. I have a 3-year-old girl who is due to start play school in September. She went for an induction in June where she joined the class, and after a few minutes, they sneaked me out and told me to come back in an hour. She must have seen me leave as I heard her crying, and apparently she cried on and off for half an hour. And the rest of the time they said she enjoyed and she said she had settled well considering it was her first time. The thing is, she's now adamant she isn't going back. Every time I mention all the fun things she will be doing at play school, she tells me quite adamantly that she isn't going. I am wailing, walking by the play school on our walks, and she gets hysterical until I tell her she isn't going in and we're passing just to say hello. She loves playing with other kids in the playground. I want to tell her they will also be going to play school. She's still adamant she won't be going. I've also read a book about play school, including the part where mummy and daddy come to pick her up after. She has a significant speech delay and will get AIM support. I am now dreading the first day as she's going to be extremely hard getting her in the door. I'm wondering, is she actually ready? I'm wondering, is it her best interest to go? I'm at home anyway with her baby sister, so there's no childcare issue. If it's in her best interest to go, how long should the trial period last if she continues to remain unhappy about going?
I think this is so topical because so many little people are going to be starting their ecky years of preschool this September.
Indeed, yeah.
And I think there's going to be a lot of anticipation around this. I think sometimes it's the idea of leaving their parent, who is ultimately their secure base, that's very stressful for young children. So for me, it may not be a case of her not liking play school, but more a case of her not wanting to leave mum.
Yes.
And just
okay.
I think that's an important distinction, because it's not I don't want to go to play school. It's just I don't want to be somewhere that you're not. And so that then puts it back on you that there are a couple of little things that you can do, because I want to add to this that, as you've said, she has a significant speech delay and there may be a fear for her, and it might be a real fear, let's be honest, that she may not be understood by her teachers or the other adults without you there. So there is an additional little consideration here. So I think if we were to, you know, go on this kind of line that she's not ready or doesn't feel ready to leave you, perhaps there are opportunities and things you can do at home from now on to practice small but regular separations, that you go from her and you come back. Even if you leave her with somebody for an hour and then maybe 90 minutes and then maybe 2 hours and build up gradually.
Yeah.
But that she's experiencing you going and returning, going and returning, while you leave her, obviously with somebody you know, to begin with. I think that could be helpful. I think in general, I would say when children are maybe showing some wobbles around separation, that playing more hide and seek type of games, those kind of concealment, discovery, peekaboo, where is it? Let's look for something and find it. It's here, it's gone. All of those things can be really helpful to help them strengthen up the permanence piece in preparation for the separation. And you could also play out the play school that you're doing all the right things with, you know, you're reading the book about it that has the important message that mum and dad come back at the end to pick you up. But maybe play it out with the little toys, do some small world play, playing it out so that it's not happening to her, but it's the same idea is happening to the toy, so she can experience it at a removed level. And yes, I suppose the last piece I'd say to you is consider delaying by 6 months if you have that available to you, and it sounds like you do, that you could sit on this. But if you were going to delay by 6 months, focus on, you're doing that because she's showing you signs that she's not quite ready, but you can spend the 6 months building up her confidence, practicing the separations, and ultimately getting her ready. Now, I don't want you to lose a place in play school. It might not be there for you in 6 months. I understand, you know, how difficult, depending on where in the country you are, that it can be more difficult in some places than others to secure a place for your child. But also, go and meet with the play school. Go meet with the staff there. They do this for a living. They are very used to children having mild, moderate, even extreme levels of distress at points of separation. And they may well have a system in place that they're confident around using. And they might say to you, look, our suggestion would be that you do begin, because you're asking me if she does go, how long is the trial period? I would anticipate that you'll have some separation wobbles, anything up to 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
If it was lingering beyond that, or if it was escalating, or if she wasn't settling at all after you left her, then you're back to the beginning part of this where she's just not ready.
Yeah. Okay. Aisling wants to know, sorry, I came late to this answer. What's small world play?
Oh, it's small world play. No, absolutely. It's where they have the little miniature things, you know, their little Sylvanian families, their little Playmobiles, the Lego men, whatever it is in your house, everyone will have some little selection of people and they play out scenarios. So it's where we see an increase in narrative in their play. They tend to take things that happen in their lives, like you sending them to bed early and not allowing them to get up for seven drinks or to come and tell you lots of news. And they'll play it out so it's happening to the little toys rather than them. It's a really good way for children of that age to deepen their understanding of life events for themselves, because they do it at the removed level, but they also get to develop critical thinking and empathy skills through that type of play, because they have to consider the situation from multiple perspectives at once. So I feel and think this, and the other little character thinks and feels this, and this is how they interact. So it's essential for developing those all important critical thinking skills.
Yeah. What does it mean? This isn't just off the top of my head. It doesn't bear any relationship to my life at all. That when the child is has these scenarios, but she keeps mentioning mummy and daddy, but she doesn't mean mummy and daddy.
She doesn't mean her mummy and daddy, mummy and daddy.
No, she's referring to my mummy and daddy, but say, I'm your daddy. And she goes, no, my mummy and daddy. And it's a kind of a whole narrative. It involves holiday homes and ice pops.
Oh, it's like an imaginative
world
play.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Oh, go with it.
Yeah, but it's almost like I'm slightly wounded. It's like a better version of parents.
She's giving you an alter ego and she's just really showing you, this is how I'd really like you to be the best daddy.
Yeah, in a holiday house with loads of ice pops.
Or
preferably made of ice pops. I have a 16-year-old. I have a problem with a 16-year-old who can't sleep. She's fabulous and is very open. I'm not worried about anything sinister. She told me recently that she heard myself and her father one night, if you get my meaning. She said she's so worried about hearing it again, she's struggling to sleep. It has become a bit of an issue now, where she can't get off to sleep, and if she does, she can't maintain it. I have reassured her it won't happen again. I was more mortified than her. How do I handle this?
Oh, I'm nervous that you've said it will never happen again. I can understand why you said that, but that's quite an assurance to give. I think that it's really hard for kids of any age to think or even consider their parents as sexual beings with a desire of their own, with an intimate life of their own, and with a relationship that is quite outside of the parent-child one. I think no matter how old you are, that's difficult. And this is what's happened here. I suppose, look, for me, she's 16. You're saying otherwise she's very open, she's fabulous. Sit down with her. Be embarrassed together, but talk this through. I think you have to tell her you're embarrassed. I think you can tell her that you can imagine how she must be feeling because you're embarrassed. Invite her to say how she's feeling in that. But I really want you to normalize sex as a normal, healthy, pleasurable part of loving relationships, and not something that is shame-based or to be embarrassed about, or mortified is the word here. You know, I think you don't want to over-focus now. You don't want to go on and on so that you're making it impossible for her to sit there, but normalize it as something that happens and that is not embarrassing. I'd be slow to do that whole it will not happen again thing, because that's not for your daughter to decide.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not. And I don't want you or her, or inadvertently you, conveying a message to her that this is something to be ashamed about.
Yeah. Well, I suppose she's saying you won't hear anything again. Can't
she promise that?
I don't know, it depends how noisy they are. Really.
I'm just going to let that linger there as a question. But I do think talking to her about it, like empathizing, that was hard. Of course, that was super awkward. I can't even imagine if I heard my own parents, I'd feel the exact same. So normalize, empathize. But then shift the focus on working with her to reestablish a soothing nighttime ritual to help her get back to that sleep pattern. So kind of move it then away. Yeah, it was embarrassing, but it is normal and healthy. But we're done with that now. Let's think about you and your sleep, and go down the lavender oils and the soothing bath and the milky drink, and do things that are focused on her and her sleep and not focused on you.
Yeah. Because I suppose in 10 or maybe longer years time, that 16-year-old might think, God, it was good my parents had a sex life.
One would hope. Yeah. But I think at 16, it's just really...
It's too much to...
It's an awkward topic in general. Yeah.
Karen wants to know, do you think sneaking away without telling her you're going may have affected how she feels about going to play school?
I do understand that question, and you see, it's a tricky one. And again, this time of year, a lot of people who are transitioning little people from preschool to big school are going to be faced with this. A lot of schools have what's called a drop and run policy because they're trying to deal with a big group of kids and they can't be dealing with long lingering goodbyes with lots of parents. I think you've got to talk openly to them. For me, I like a sort of ritualistic goodbye, something that children can predict with certainty. So a special handshake that you decide between you that has four parts, a handshake, a high five, a fist bump, and a little pinky lock at the end, four parts to it, and that you do that at the point of separation and reunification every day, because it signifies for the child, I'm going but I'm coming back, and it's your own unique special little goodbye, something like that. I do think some way of marking the going away. I'm not a huge fan of the sneaking out, but I do understand that this is quite common for a lot of places, the drop and run policy.
Yeah, but you do see parents, oh my God, the song and dance about saying goodbye.
Well, sometimes it's not just about the child.
No,
it's the parent.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
They're actually making it worse.
Absolutely.
By trying to make themselves feel better.
No, I totally get it. Yeah.
I remember talking to the play school about my daughter, as in the beginning, she hated it. They used to busy her with putting her bag in the little cubby hole, hanging up her coat. Then they make her empty a toy box and choose some toys. By the time they got through this, she'd forgotten I was even there. Off I popped and she was happy out.
Again, though, it's predictable, isn't it? Yeah. There's a ritual part
Absolutely.
To that. Yeah.
I have a three-year-old boy who screeches a lot, usually when he's happy, but it is worrying that he does it so much. Would you have any suggestions as to how to stop him from screeching?
God, if I had the answer to this, I feel like I could retire and never work again. You know, actually, though, I mean, not to dismiss this, but from 18 months onwards, when they enter that toddlerhood, 17, 18 months, they really enjoy experimenting with their vocal muscles, because they don't have a lot of language in terms of vocabulary, but they're beginning to discover, whoa, I can really use this to communicate and convey emotion and feelings in a way that I might not have words. So that whole screeching, screaming, yelling, that prosody of voice that they use is actually quite normal experimentation. I'm not saying it's pleasant to listen to, but it is quite normal. Because toddlers, we have to remember, don't have impulse control. They don't really understand, and certainly not consistently, how they're expected to behave when they're out of the house or in different environments. That kind of cause effect and the impact this is having on other people around me, and being able to read their furrowed brows as cues that this is displeasing, that's not in yet, nor would we expect it to be by three. You're a little bit off that, I'd say. You know, by four, you certainly see better signs of that. So it is developmentally normal. It's typically a passing phase that most, if not all, toddlers do to varying degrees. I would say try not to give it too big a reaction, because it risks, as with most things, reinforcing it. But I do want to validate that, it can be super irritating. So when a child is screeching or screaming, I work with little kids, and often this happens. Some of the times I do, and this sounds like I just screech back at them, but I call it match and regulate play rather than just screeching back at them. So if a child comes in screeching really loud, I meet them there and I screech loud, and then I go, bring my voice down a notch, and then bring it down, and bring it down to a whisper, and then back up and back down and back up and down, and settle somewhere in the middle, so that I'm setting the tone. Let's get really loud, super quiet, really loud, super quiet, now somewhere in the middle. And now that I have you where I want you in the middle, distract you, redirect you into a different type of play. The other thing you could try is when your child is in mid-screech, is just start singing a familiar song at normal volume yourself. Just keep singing, push through it and keep singing, and invite him to join in the singing with you, so that again, that's a type of match and regulate approach. Yeah. Also, though, when you have a screechy child, be aware of noise levels around your home, TVs, radios, things you might have on as background noise yourself that you might not even be aware are quite loud, because that's inadvertently setting a volume level for your child to match as well. So if you do have devices on in various rooms, keep an eye on them, turn them down, and when you leave the room, turn them off, so there isn't a whole lot of background noise going on. You could also try looking at him and just covering your ears and saying, oh no, that loud screech really hurts my ears. I wonder if you can use your inside voice, and that gives you an opening to start talking to him about what's an inside voice and what's an outside voice. Remember, children are very experiential learners, so you can't just talk that to them. You want to say, let's practice an inside voice. Now let's go outside the back door and do our outside voice, and back in and back out and back in, and make it some fun. But basically, you're going to do match and regulate, so that you're setting the volume level.
Yeah. Actually, somebody sent in a text. It's one of those multi-purpose texts. It applies to this question as much as the previous question. It's just get her earplugs. That could apply to the mother or the 16-year-old who's hearing things she doesn't want to hear. Right, we have a question about a 13-year-old wetting the bed. We're going to talk about that after this break. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You're on a fortune. It's still with us. Mary on Twitter says, this is going back to children making up their own little narratives. My daughter had an entire imaginary Indian family, complete with an alter ego called Jessica, who got the blame for everything. I miss Jessica, says Mary.
We all need a Jessica.
We all need a Jessica in our life. Now, my son will be 13 in September and is still wetting the bed a few times per week. Should he go on medication at this stage?
Okay, I mean, so there's very little detail to go on here. So I'm just going to give you kind of a quick basic answer on this one, because what I'm reading here, it certainly implies to me that he has never achieved nocturnal dryness, because you're saying he's still wetting a few times a week. In that case, I would certainly want him to be seen by your GP, because your GP could, you know, they can test and ensure that he doesn't have an infection of some kind of urinary infection, or that he doesn't have weakness. It might refer you onwards for further testing, but that there isn't a weakness of the muscle in the bladder that is preventing him from staying dry at night, or can further test to see perhaps he's not producing enough of that hormone that slows down urine production at night. Some people don't. And, you know, we often speak about not necessarily 13, but children who might be 7 and still struggling with nighttime enuresis. But at this stage, at 13, I would certainly want him to be seen. Go to your GP, and either your GP will address it there and then, or will refer you on.
Right. Okay. It may be a medical situation, it may be something else.
Well, I suppose the fact that if he has never achieved it, my first call would be let's rule out the physical.
Yeah.
If he had achieved it and has regressed a while back or at some stage and has stayed regressed, then of course still rule out the physical, because it's easier to rule out the physical than to explore the emotional. But if there is other life events going on, if you do think, well, look, this is all to do with something that happened at this age and has never really been addressed, or there's ongoing emotional issues, maybe in school or with peers or within the family or in his general environment, of course you would factor that in, but I'd still want the physical ruled out first.
Now, we don't know the age of this child. From what I'm going to read, it seems like the child is young enough. It's been 8 months since my son has seen his dad, and it appears he's a very distant memory to him. My own family, in particular my own father, is very, very close to my son. Recently, my son made reference to my father being his daddy, and while he is acting as a sort of father figure, he's obviously not his daddy. My son calls my dad by his real name and not granddad. I've tried to explain that my father is his granddad, and I've taken a picture out of his own dad and told him that this is his dad. This then in turn leaves a lot of questions from my son. Have you any advice on how to explain to my son what's going on? Long-term effects of the way I tell him things is a major concern for me.
Yeah, I mean, not knowing his age, you know, is a bit of a factor here, but he does sound young as you're describing him. So I'm kind of answering this as if you were talking about a very young child. For me, with young children, I think this is quite common, even if his dad was actively in his life, that when your young children hear you call your parents mum or dad, often they just mirror you and they start going, hey, dad, or hey, mum. It doesn't mean I think this is my dad. It's I'm copying what you're saying. So there, that could be a part of this, and it's very common with lots of children. But not having his own dad as an active presence in his life, he may be mirroring you that I want a dad. He may be aware, if he's in preschool or even junior school, you know, of other kids having a dad, seeing their dads. And he does see his granddad, as you've rightly identified, performing a pseudo father function for him. And it may be that he's saying, well, okay, well, he's my dad. I call him John. He's my dad, though. He does the dad stuff. He is a kind of dad, and he's your dad and you call him dad. It could simply be an amalgamation of that. So I just don't think it means that your son thinks that his grandfather is his dad. He may well get the difference, but want to think of him in that dad role. I'm not sure that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Okay.
So I stick with what you're doing. Gently and firmly state your dad lives wherever, away or wherever it is. And whatever he calls granddad is your granddad. You might want to, because I don't know, maybe it's your choice or your granddad's choice that he calls granddad by his name rather than anything else. Mm. But there might be a middle ground that he could pick a new name for granddad. He, you know, like a Pops or Papa or something that's in the dad territory but isn't dad.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that might be a nice middle ground for him. But I wouldn't challenge it too much. I wouldn't keep saying, no, he's not your dad. No, I wouldn't make a big deal like that. I'd reflect when he says something like, oh, he's my dad, that, oh, granddad does lots of fun things for you. He loves you very much. But you're naming in that sentence, it's granddad.
Yeah.
OK, stick with that. It's age dependent. Consider drawing out a family tree, genogram style, you know, who everyone is and who everyone's connected to, so he can clearly see where everyone is and located. But I think in terms of you're worried about, you know, setting a tone for going forward, if you are calm, clear and consistent with what you say and how you say it from now on, your son will get this, and you can grow up the content of that conversation as he grows up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know the nature of why his dad isn't actively in his life, but that may change. It may not change. And there may be a different narrative to be told as your son gets older. But for now, I'd keep it quite simple.
Because there will be, obviously, I mean, that's the next thing along almost, like, and I think she alluded to herself that, okay, he's not your dad. Well, then where's my dad?
Exactly.
And why doesn't my dad live with me? And I suppose that's what she's nervous about.
Yeah, and but I think you can be nervous about it, but you can also anticipate that that's quite a normal next question, isn't
it?
And, you know, as parents and as the parent who is there, you're not expected to have every answer off the top of your head. So you can either locate dad somewhere. Well, you know, he's not around. He lives in this place and that makes it hard for him to see us or to be in touch. Or, you know, he's decided he can't be the best kind of dad he wants to be. So he's not around right now. And that you have a photo, because you've mentioned a photo, you can certainly say, but this is what he looks like. And have you any questions that I can tell you? There might be some things I don't know. So be honest about it, but don't make up a romantic story about him either.
Yeah.
You know, be as honest as you can. But at the moment, I'd be focusing on your son understanding that he has people in his life who are there and who really do love him and do lots of things for him. But I think you can empathize as well that it is tricky for him to understand, how come some people have a dad around and I don't, and what does that all mean?
How do I help my 14-year-old nephew who squirrels away items belonging to his grandparents, like tools, small garden items, fishing reels, screwdrivers and the like? I don't know if he's putting money away or anything, like jewellery. This is all we have found so far. His parents divorced recently. Would this be a cause?
Okay, I'm going to park the whole money and jewellery, because that's something you don't know. So let's stick with what you do know, because there's enough going on there.
Yeah.
I'm always aware, you know, when someone writes in about a family member who's not their own child, that there might well be additional and very relevant details that you're not privy to.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, I'm going to suggest that you talk to his parents about your concerns, because they may well have more detail, more context and more understanding and can deal with this because of that. Perhaps start with the parent you're directly related to, just because there's a divorce situation here. So just in case there's some difficulties, and do so from a place of concern and compassion, rather than sit down there till I tell you what your toe rag son is up to and he's stealing.
But he says that's all we have found so far. So obviously more than this person is aware of this problem. So it may well be the parents know about it.
It may well be, exactly.
Know about it.
I suppose for me, it sounds like he's stealing a lot of random items of little to low value.
Yeah.
Just based on what you're saying there. And I'm not saying that's okay. The reason I'm referencing that is it sounds like it's more what I'd call opportunistic stealing rather than stealing with an intention. He's not stealing the iPads to sell them for street value. He's taking items that are available.
Well, the word, he squirrels away items rather than he's stealing them.
It's like hoarding,
them.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's like hoarding.
And the building things, up a stockpile.
Like garden items, fishing reels, screwdrivers. It's like grandparent stuff, or particularly granddad
and
stuff.
And he's taking it from grandparents, but it's the kind of stuff you'd find lying around.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that does strike me about this, because it may well be the thrill, the adrenaline this gives him that's making him do it. You know, it's a bit risky. It's, you know, at 14, they're certainly wired to take risk. The divorce could well be a trigger, especially if the behaviour is new and it occurred around the same time. But I suppose I'm wondering as well, does he know that these items have been missed? So perhaps the grandparents parents here could express concern in front of him rather than to him, that they've noticed a number of their items and they could name them have gone missing. They could say to him, look, did you spot any of these around? Could you keep an eye out for them? Because it marks his card that it hasn't gone unnoticed.
Yeah.
And it gives him a chance to self-correct the behaviour, or perhaps, oh, look at that, find the stuff that's gone missing and return it. If it was to continue or escalate, it should be directly addressed, because he's 14, not 4. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
And so long as you are certain it's him, of course, I really want to emphasise that. Let's not assume it's him. Like, you want to be certain it's him.
Yeah.
And I'd like, you know, that could be done directly. You know, maybe the grandparents are saying to him compassionately, I know you're having a hard time with mum and dad at the moment, but we have noticed this. So let's just make a deal that you're not going to do it anymore, and we can leave it at that. Or if you're further concerned, certainly bring his parents in.
Yeah. Okay, Joanne, thanks a million
thanks
for
so
coming
much.
Into us today. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break after that. A man who was in a vegetative state and no one knew who he was.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.